Managing Director at Hikulangi Enterprises. You might have heard of Hikulangi. Morning to you, Malu.
Morning, Tim.
You've got a bunch of plants all ready for harvest north of Gisborne. We'll talk about that in a minute or two. Can I come to you first, Eric, though? What do you think of the Canadian model?
Well, I think it's fabulous that they have legalized. They've left a lot of decisions in the different provinces, so they can each come up with their own rules around it. And that's following how Canada has set alcohol regulation. So in some provinces, it looks a little bit more like New Zealand, where you can buy beer and wine basically at the corner store or liquor at specialty shops. Some provinces would have it instead that it's at a government store, depending on whether it's hard liquor or beer. In Canada for marijuana, similarly, some provinces are running it through government-operated stores and others have left it to private licensed stores.
From an economic point of view, is it a good thing or a bad thing, legalization?
Well, it depends what you're trying to achieve with prohibition. So prohibition stops a lot of people from consuming marijuana, but it doesn't stop everyone. And it makes sure that that marijuana that is consumed is purchased through the black market, through means that are a lot less safe. If you're getting product that has a bit of mold in it, you've got no recourse through the Consumer Guarantees Act. There's no real way to get a product recalled, which we've seen recently in Canada. There's some product that had a bit of mold on it, they had a recall. They replaced people's faulty product, as you'd expect with anything else that has a recall in the legal market. What you can do with a legal market that you can't do with a prohibition regime is turn the kinds of profits that go to gangs that would otherwise be supplying into excise revenue. So if you think the point of policy should be to deter consumption for some reason, and I don't think there's any particular reason government should be doing this, but if that's your goal with prohibition, you can do that by setting an excise regime in a legal market so that the price to consumers stays about where it has been, and that higher price then deters consumption. But instead of having it be gain profits, instead it's excise revenue for the government.
Okay. Manu, I suspect that you're anticipating we are going to legalize eventually. You're gearing up to be ready?
Yeah, it hasn't been a major focus of us. We're really focusing on the medical cannabis aspects and looking forward to that legislation and those regulations being passed as quickly as possible. But if the country does vote to decriminalise, then yes, we'll be in a really good position for that.
Okay. And what's this? You've got plants ready for harvest now?
Well, not quite. The ministry's given us our licence, so we're the first company to get a medical cannabis cultivation licence. We're building a purpose-built facility, and that will have the plants. So they've given us the green light to import genetics from overseas, and we're getting into that now.
So the status of those plants is that they are covered by licence from the Department of Health?
Yeah, that's right, Ministry of Health, and it's only for medicines at this stage, so, and only for research and development. Until the legislation passes, that new law will set up the regime for commercial production in New Zealand, but until that happens, we can only do research and development.
Right, and you'd want to go into the recreational game if it opened up, would you?
Well, looking overseas at what's happened with the industry there, it's going to provide massive opportunities for places like Ruatoria and provincial New Zealand. So, and we've seen Canadian companies that have branded themselves Kiwi Cannabis and are selling into Europe. So that's really validated the opportunities for New Zealand as a source of trusted, safe and high quality product.
I wanted to put that to Eric, though, from the point of view of the economics of it. What we see is a small bunch of people making a huge amount of money out of this. So it's really just transferring it, isn't it? It's money that would otherwise end up in the gangs, I guess, being transferred to a different kind of operator.
Yeah, so you have
sort of licensed gangs.
The gangs in, you've got licensed producers in, and you've got a lot more opportunity for product innovation. You get in trouble innovating too much in illegal markets. In legal markets, it's within the regulated framework. You're seeing all kinds of different sprays that are being developed for some users that prefer that, products for vaporizers. you get more innovation, you get more opportunity for value added, and a much safer product overall for consumers that then have a much greater security of supply. They know that there's not been adulterants put in. Nobody worries when you go out to the liquor store to buy a bottle of whiskey that there's been methamphetamine stuck into it. Yeah, but you might worry about that with the illegal supply. It's far safer doing it this way.
How does it impact the economy to have a workforce that's stoned half the time?
Well, if we look to America where with legalization there, we haven't seen that much evidence of substantial increases in use, but at least with the
medical marijuana
coming in, it is early days. Now, employers always have the right to, just in the same way that they can discipline you or fire you for showing up to work drunk, they can do the same if you show up to work stoned. It's harder to test for intoxication with marijuana use. You can do some field sobriety tests, I suppose, if you've got people who are working heavy machinery in the same way that you would for alcohol. I don't think many employers have a breathalyzer on deck just in case somebody's shown up drunk. They can tell just by your behavior. They have to have similar kinds of provisions for employers with marijuana being legalized. But if we look at things like traffic accidents in the United States, there's not been any evidence of increases there. There's some nice work looking at differences between Washington State and Oregon, looking at differences in timing with legalization. There is no evidence of increased traffic accidents. Some other studies are showing some reduced traffic accidents because there's a bit of a reduction in alcohol use. Most of the scare stories that you hear about it haven't really come true.
All those the catastrophic consequences, okay, haven't yet come to pass.
No, it's always something weird could yet happen. Yeah.
All right. Does that concern your conscience at all, Manu, as somebody who eventually you know will become one of these licensed drug dealers? The impact down the line.
Yeah, and I guess that's the opportunity with deregulation is that those young people, as Eric was saying, overseas, it seems like consumption actually decreases in a number of the states that have decriminalized. So that's a positive from regulating it. So in that case, I guess we're saying it's got potential benefits. And there's also the families that are at the moment are growing for the black market who have to look over their shoulder, who has dad taken away to prison, who won't have to worry about that if they come into the legal market. So a number of the families in our area who have been growing for black market are looking, you know, they can see the writings on the wall and they're looking forward to coming into that legal regime. They know the plant, they know how to grow it well, and there's legitimate jobs and employment, and they'll be paying taxes on that instead of, keeping it all themselves.
Okay, we're looking to find a downside to it. You guys obviously very experienced in pitching your argument. Thanks so much for being with us this morning. Really interesting. Manu Cuddy at Hikurangi Enterprises and Dr. Eric Crampton, economist with the New Zealand Initiative. 7:23.